today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Well, that's just typical. 5 minutes to go to the most important party of my life and half the house has been wrecked by a gigantic sandwich.
Well, at least it means there'll be something to eat now.
What?
It's meat.
Okay, it is Friday. Friday is Young Ones Day on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan. Patrick Foster is off today. He's taking these Fridays off. Well-deserved break. With me are Stephen Routledge. Hello, Stephen.
Hi.
And Will Pfeiffer.
Hello, everybody.
And I'm Jim Lenihan. I did say that, right? I don't know. Hopefully, after all this time, people know, recognize my voice a little bit. Okay, so as I mentioned, we're doing a six-episode series every Friday, talking about season one or series one of The Young Ones, the beloved British sitcom from the 80s. We'll do the second season a little bit down the road. So, and we are up to episode five, Interesting. But before we do that, there's a couple things I want to talk to you guys about. Real quickly. Number one, yes. Stephen, I noticed, you know, as we can see each other here on Zoom, I noticed you had your Teenage Fan Club mug. Is that a mug? There? Yeah, mug.
Oh.
Teenage Fan Club, your favorite band, Scottish band.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You are English, but live in Scotland.
Correct.
Right? Yes. But what I really want to get at here is what is in the mug?
Tea, of course.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the tea. Right. What kind of tea?
Yorkshire tea. That's the best variety of tea bag I've found. So just so that's the tea with a little bit of milk, no sugar, just milk, no sugar.
Okay.
Not milky. Yeah, milk in it, but not weak. You know, it's strong.
Right.
What I call builder's tea. You know.
How much now? Okay, and how much tea will you drink in a day?
I mean, I don't drink a huge... It depends. Sometimes the customers will give me cups of tea at work, but I'll always have a cup of tea at breakfast, always have a cup of tea after my dinner, and I quite often, if I'm not working, I'll maybe have a cup of tea at like 10:30, 11:00, and maybe mid-afternoon. So anywhere between, normally around about 3 or 4 cups of tea a day, right. I would say.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Now, Will,
it's reasonable.
Will, do you have something there? Are you drinking something?
I have coffee.
Okay, coffee, not tea.
No, not tea. Coffee.
Coffee black.
I rarely drink tea. Black? I like tea, but coffee. Coffee black with one stevia in it.
Stevia.
So like one sugar.
Artificial sweetener thing. Yeah.
No, it's all natural.
And
supposedly.
Do you ever drink hot tea?
Very infrequently, but every so often I'll have a little hot tea.
Yeah.
I like it.
I do like it too, but it's very infrequent for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while. Oddly, I don't know. I actually like it at night.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
That's usually when I'll have it.
And then I often will drink a decaffeinated tea. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
At night, I drink something different. So at night, before I go to bed, not immediately before, but in sort of the lead up to going to bed, about 9:30, 9:30, I'll have a Horlicks, if you know what Horlicks is.
Mm-mm.
No.
What's a Horlicks?
No. So Horlicks is a, you can also get Ovaltine, which is it's another brand. So it's a malted hot milk drink.
Oh.
Okay.
So you make it, it's got like vitamins and stuff in it, and you make it with hot milk. And yes, mainly malt is kind of the main flavor. The idea is that a milky drink helps you sleep. Although I've since found out that actually always doing the same thing at the same time every night helps you sleep because your body learns that it's then time to go to bed. Obviously, having a double espresso an hour before you went to bed is probably not going to work on that.
Yeah, that's not going to do it.
But yeah, it's not the milkiness of the drink, it's the time that you're drinking it and the regularity. And that's the thing.
What is that drink called again?
Horlicks. So it's Horlicks.
Okay. I know of Ovaltine. We have Ovaltine.
Yeah, so it's like Ovaltine.
I haven't heard of Ovaltine. Nobody's mentioned Ovaltine in my presence in probably 20 years.
Except for A Christmas Story. It's always
is that a Christmas story?
Plot point okay. in Christmas Story. Yeah. Yeah. It's every Christmas Eve. Stephen, where are you, by the way, in Scotland?
So I live in a small town called Callander, which is okay. about. So we're just on the edge of the Highlands. So we're about an hour from Edinburgh and Glasgow.
Spent a semester more in during college in Edinburgh, and she just loved it.
Yeah, Edinburgh's a little bit further away. I mean, if I go to a gig in Glasgow and I drive, I can be home in under an hour, just under an hour.
Mm.
So,
Okay,
one other thing I want to talk about. Actually, two more things. Real quickly, I want to hold up here for you guys to see the double CD set that I purchased here recently.
Oh, look at that. Look at that image.
Yes. I'm holding up Cliff Richard 40 Golden Greats. 40. It's a two CD 40 set.
40 hits.
40 hit songs, right. It goes up until, I have the dates here. It starts, the first song was 1958, and it goes up to 1977.
Move It is the first track on there, I believe, then, is it?
Is Move It, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great song.
One of the first, easy, a very easy but effective guitar riff to learn.
Yeah. So.
Soul. Let me tell you, baby, it's called rock and roll. They say it's gonna die, but honey, please let's face it. Well, we just don't know what's going to replace it. Yeah, ballads and calypsos, I've got nothing on. Real country music that just drives along.
That's a great song. Now, I've only listened to disc one so far, so I've listened to 20 songs, and it's already pretty interesting. It goes up to about 1963 on the first disc, and you can already start to hear sort of the transition into sort of softer, poppier kind of stuff mm-hmm. away from the more sort of traditional rock and roll that it starts with, yeah. But there's some really good songs on here. I probably heard like two or three of these songs before, so this is mostly almost all new to me. And I think we discussed it before. We, you know, Cliff Richard, not a big star over here. The other thing, Will, I'll say is some of his songs and his singing style, especially the stuff when you get to like the early 60s, reminds me of Ricky Nelson.
Oh, I could see
yes.
that. Yeah.
Yes.
I like Ricky Nelson.
Not Rick Nielsen. That's a different guy.
Ricky Nelson.
Ricky Nelson, yes. Now, I will say real quickly to listeners, on today's episode... And I think next week's as well. I don't think there are any Cliff Richard references the episode. So there's already sort of like, you know, moving away from that a bit, I guess. Okay, here we go. Episode 5, Interesting, which I find interesting because previously had an episode called Boring. So there you go. Right. Okay.
Once in every lifetime comes a love like this. Oh, I need you. You need me.
So we open up with Rick and Neil. They're cleaning up the flat, and we learn they're getting ready for a party. And I want to point this out first off, Rick's wardrobe here, wearing yellow overalls. Did that?
Yeah, what is that?
Oh, dungarees, something.
Dungarees, is that what you call them?
Dungarees, yeah. Yeah, they're horrendous, something.
Yes. But the same sort of like gray buttoned up shirt that he kind of like always wears. It doesn't matter, but anyway. Okay, they get the place cleaned up. They show it to Mike that they've done a good job. Mike notices a cigarette butt on the carpet. They explain that was Vivian's job to vacuum. Vivian appears with a souped up vacuum. It looks like it has like an engine from a car
engine, yes.
on the vacuum. And he turns it on, and it not only takes care of the cigarette butt, but also sucks up the rug and pulls up floorboards.
Yes. You know, one thing I realize I like about Vivian is, all you know, Mike is always cool, Neil's always morose, Rick is always angry. Vivian is enthusiastic. He's like, seems to enjoy life. I mean, he's violent, but he's like, he gets excited about stuff.
That's a good point. That is a really good point. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I want to mention here the t-shirt in this episode. It was before we had seen Vivian in a Rush t-shirt and a Kiss t-shirt, and this time it's Saxon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that. Okay. I never heard of Saxon.
Well, I don't really know Saxon either. I did a little bit of research here, but I feel like I should turn this over to Stephen. He probably knows something about Saxon.
Yeah, so they were another sort of new wave of British heavy metal type band from the early 80s. So, but never really hit the big time that sort of, yeah. So that early 80s was the kind of their time, I guess. But it's from a similar sort of scene to Iron Maiden came out of, you know. Vivian, he might act like and dress like a punk rocker, but yeah, his choice of bands completely undermines any pretense that he's into punk.
Right. Do you have any Saxon records in your collection, Stephen?
No. They're a lesser tier kind of band, I would say. That they're not up there with the Maidens, Judas Priest, those sort of bands. That there'd be a rung below, you know. So I'm sure there's hardcore Saxon fans out there, but I wouldn't say they're an essential listen. There's much better. If you want to listen to that era, that sort of stuff, there's much better stuff out there, you know.
Well, okay. Now I'm glad you brought that up because I looked up their music because, like, Will, I was not familiar with this band. I think I had heard of them, but that was about it. Like, they had no success in the United States, even though some other British heavy metal bands did, for sure.
Iron Maiden and Judas Priest were very
big. Of course. But I looked them up, and I found, their two highest charting songs in the UK, and then I've listened to those songs on YouTube, and yeah, I think I'll take a pass on Saxon. I don't know. It wasn't bad, but it just felt very sort of generic.
Yeah,
you know, 80s metal, right?
Yeah, they could be Spinal Tap. Let's put it that way.
Well, funny you mentioned that. And according to Wikipedia, Harry Shearer spent 3 days on the road with Saxon to do research for Spinal Tap. Yes,
checks out.
Yeah, isn't that funny? And they didn't know this at the time. Why he was hanging out with them. And when they saw the film, apparently, like, most of the band was did not find
not
it
happy.
Particularly funny. No.
Unfortunately for them, the rest of the world thought it was an all-time classic.
So there you go, Saxon. Okay. Let's see. The vacuum then goes out the window. Vivian retrieves it. He cuts open the bag with a knife, and Neil's friend, who's also named Neil and also a hippie, emerges from
like
the bag. Yes. Yes. Rick is then sort of upset that there's another hippie in the house, or gets upset about that. I don't exactly understand the motivation here, why this bothers him so much, other than it gives him a chance to push the friend into the refrigerator where he gets trapped. I don't know.
Neil, who is this? What is he doing?
Well, this is Neil, Rick, Neil. Look, just please don't bring him down.
It's a hippie,
right?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll take it to get out of here and say, this isn't a youth hostel, you know.
Neil, my barely adequate psychic defences are crumbling.
Look, just tell it to get out, for heaven's sake.
So anyway, but before that, the friend Neil opens the fridge in search of food. And here we see the first puppets in this episode. It's various food items in the refrigerator sort of soliciting him, like they're on like a street corner and that sort of thing. And Tomato sings a jazz song.
Yes, it does.
I've been picked up by the cops so many times gone by. They grill you for an hour and they say you're gonna fry. I've been scandalized and purified and caught up with a knife. I've just got to catch up with my life.
Okay, so I mentioned Rick pushes the hippie friend into the fridge, closes the door, and this I really liked, the disclaimer that appears then in graphic form on the screen says, the BBC would like to warn all small children that pushing people inside old fridges is a bloody stupid thing to do.
That's right. That used to be a big thing in America, kids in fridges. Because you're not allowed to throw... You can't throw away a fridge if you don't take the door off.
You have to take the door
like
off
that.
If you have an old refrigerator.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Now I think you can push it open easily if you were inside.
But yeah, that's very much a sort of BBC don't try this at home kind of thing that I strongly suspect lawyers were involved and said, you can show that, but you have to put this on something.
I've seen on YouTube some BBC PSAs about childhood safety, and they are horrifying. They go so much further than American ones would do. Like kids, they show kids like literally drowning or getting, you know, farm machinery and stuff like that. They're
really
shocking. Yeah, they're nuts. Way worse than America.
The boy who didn't look for a safe place to cross. He couldn't be bothered to walk to a place where cars could be seen from a nice open space. So he crossed the road right next to a bend. Now his arm for some while will be struggling to mend. A car cannot dodge what it cannot see, so flatten the boy. Unfortunately, now he can't swim, dress himself, or go-kart, because his arm is all limp and falling apart. Always cross where you can see what's coming.
Let's see here. Mike tells Vivian that he's not to use that vacuum again. It's too dangerous. And then Mike unplugs it. And then there's like a little, again, with puppetry, a little sex joke between the outlet and the plug.
Yes. Was it good for you or whatever?
Yes. The electric or something.
That's right. Yes.
Okay. The doorbell rings and it's like an evangelist. Is that what you would call this woman? An evangelist, right? She, she sort of forces her way in. She forces Neil to the floor to start praying, but she's actually sort of like wrestling with him. She sits on the table and what is that, like dip or something that she gets on her backside?
Yeah, which is there in a later shot, I noticed. They actually did sit in something.
So that lady's name is Dawn French. And
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I noticed from further notes, yes, that is of French and Saunders. And
who shows up later in this show,
correct,
right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
right.
So,
okay.
So she's very well known in the UK.
I did not recognize her.
Both from French and Saunders and also from a program called The Vicar of Dibley.
Mm-hmm. My mom loves that show, by the way.
So she's very, very well known. But yes, that's a very young and unknown at that point, Dawn French.
Okay. I've heard of French and Saunders. I think that got some play over here.
Right. Ab Fab was bigger, but Yeah, French and Saunders got some.
Now, was she so absolutely fabulous? That was Jennifer Saunders, yes. Right? And was Dawn French on that as well?
No.
Okay. No. Got it.
Also, I want to say with this Christian evangelist, you would not see a portrayal of a Christian evangelist in America this crazy.
Like she's very crazy. After she
and violent. You wouldn't see this.
After she sits in something, then she'd go starts just throwing dishes all over the place or knocking dishes off various tables and goes on this little rampage. Yes. It's very bizarre, right? Mike enters, and this is great. He's dressed like Adamant.
Yes.
He even makes a reference to it, right? So there's no confusion over this. But I just love that. It looked great on him.
Ha! A Lucast!
No, I'm supposed to be an actor.
And of course he starts hitting on her right away.
For no, just because she's a woman. That's and he right. has to hit on her.
That's right. Vivian enters and drinks some kind of blue drink that's in like a glass, you know, mug, and says, "This should get things going." And then all of his hair falls out.
Yes, and remains out for the rest of the episode.
That's right. So he's totally bald, and he's very Steven-like. And and then this causes the woman. She refers to him as the Beast.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, I'm jumping ahead here a bit, but later on, when you notice on his bald head, he actually has a tattoo of 666.
Oh, does he?
On his bald head. Yes. You don't see it right here, but you notice it a little bit later on in the party.
Yes. Yeah, it's above the ear kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And
which is more metal than punk, you know.
It's a
more
again,
metal, yes. Oh, for sure. Kind of yeah. Okay. Then she starts talking about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and then we see a scene. We're taken mm-hmm. off to a scene with the four horsemen of the apocalypse, right? And I don't know, you guys tell me what you thought of this. I don't know how much detail we want to get into, but it was a funny little, very sort of Monty Python-esque sort of conversation, right?
Yeah, very Monty Python. Yeah. And it had like shot with that filter, so it almost looked like an album cover or something. And of course, they're like, God gives them Travel Scrabble or what? I forget. Was
that was a good joke because they were so bored.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then waiting for the apocalypse. And
they had tons of Travel Scrabble. And then Famine keeps saying how he's hungry. He's like, right. I'm famished.
Did you notice that Famine was Neil?
Yes.
Was it? I thought, okay.
Yeah.
Was he the only one in the of those guys?
That I could tell.
Yeah. There is a guy called Keith Allen plays Pestilence. I don't know if you're familiar with Keith Allen. He is a British actor. He's been in a lot of TV stuff. He was in the film Shallow Grave. I don't know if you remember that
Oh,
film.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
He was the guy who was dead on the bed.
Okay.
Ellie
Childgrave. And the death guy was just a skeleton, the death horseman. He was just a prop skeleton.
Okay, yes. So you mentioned, Will, that Famine keeps complaining that he's hungry. Finally, God gives him a sandwich. A sandwich appears in his hand, but I guess he doesn't like this particular sandwich or something. I didn't quite get this, but he just sort of tosses it off, right?
Yes.
And of course, what happens then?
It lands in the house, and you find out it's also a giant sandwich, like the scale of the horseman, and it crushes the Christian.
Yes.
And then who says, somebody, I have my notes, but I can't remember, says, well, is it Rick? Yeah. Well, that's just typical, which is, it's the least typical thing ever to happen.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yes, typical. Of course, right, yes.
And so, then Neil's horrified because there's meat in the sandwich.
Yes. Okay, now two guests actually arrive for the party, and this is, as you mentioned, Stephen, Jennifer Saunders is one of the guests. I love how Rick is so controlling of this party. He's like berating them for getting there 5 minutes early.
Yeah.
Right.
Who the bloody hell are you?
Oh, hello, Rick. We're here for the party.
Oh, well, it's a bit early, isn't it? It's not supposed to start for another 5 minutes. I just think I remember telling you 7:30. Are you calling me a liar?
Yes, we can go to the pub.
Oh, you go to the pub, can you? Oh, that's all right. Yeah, go on, piss off to the pub. I just thought you were my friends, that's all.
Oh, look, Rick, it's only 5 minutes.
No, listen, Rick, it's only 5 minutes. Tell that to Roger Bannister!
These are his friends, too, allegedly.
Yes,
yeah.
These are, yeah. Right.
Yeah. He's such an asshole.
There's a very bad Roger Bannister joke that just cracked me up.
Yeah, I like that joke.
Yeah, it was quite funny. Honestly.
About, you know, 5 minutes is not that long. Well, tell that to Roger Bannister, and then they
There's
go over.
There's one joke, and then.
And then they go over and say something to the actual Bannister, and he speaks back or something.
He says, oh, how interesting. Something like that.
Yes.
Now, Roger Bannister, of course, broke the 4-minute mile.
Right. Famously, yes.
Okay, more guests arrive. Rick yells at them for sort of not being the right place in the flat. And then he starts berating other guests for trying to, the first guests, for trying to open up a bottle of alcohol before the party has started, even though they're there. Vivian enters and tries to impress the young ladies with push-ups, although they're really bad push-ups.
They're not push-ups. I don't know what they are.
They're kind of like hip thrusts combined with like some mini Mexican body wave or something. It's weird.
Just terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, now Rick answers the door. It's another guest. This is Dr. Morrison. So we find out this he's a sociology professor who Rick is, you know...
Rick sucks up to...
Yes.
Embarrassingly.
Right, right.
Hello, Dr. Morrison. I didn't think you'd be able to make it. I'm glad... thanks. I'm glad you did, though. I'll be meaning to talk to you about Trotsky. Look, I've got some trousers like the ones you've got. They're great, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, look at me being stupid. Hi, come in. How are you? How did you get here?
I came in my car.
Amazing.
And he's much, much sort of cooler than anybody else in this whole show.
But he also seems like kind of an asshole, too.
He might be.
kind of a cool guy.
He hands Rick a bottle that he brought to the party. And I noticed a little bit later that Rick is like hiding the bottle behind something else, like on the counter. So, and this is where Rick says that he's showing off the yellow overalls and says he got trousers just like the professor's. So this is something that this professor wears.
I guess.
Although, seems unlikely, doesn't it?
Yes. Doesn't
yeah,
seem
it
right.
seems very unlikely.
Yes. Also, when the professor then introduced himself to the others at the party, we learned that his name is Jim Morrison.
That's right. Of course it is.
Oh, and this is great. Then Rick, so now the party, I believe, has actually started now that the professor is there. Mm-hmm. And Rick starts bragging to all the guests about how crazy their house is and gives two examples.
Mind you, we're all pretty potty in this house. Last night, right, we were all watching the television, and it was a program we wanted to watch, you know, and we were just watching it, and right in the middle of it, I got up and turned it off. Mad! I don't care what I do, you know. Well, unless it's work or anything like that, you know. Last Wednesday, we stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning. Okay, pop music, let's go.
Madness. Yeah. Sheer madness. That's right.
Okay, music reference here. Rick puts on a Human League.
That's right.
Record, but within 1 second, 2 seconds maybe of putting it on, police burst into the house, smash up the stereo, and... say,
right, the music's too loud. The neighbours have been complaining. You just watch your step, sonny.
And Rick sucks up to the police then, right? Doesn't he? Or he's all cowed, you know.
he does sort of. And then Vivian also says that he'd like to join the police.
Yes, this has been hinted. You know, Vivian loves power, so yes. Yeah, he's, you know.
Yes, because they're all like sort of calling the police fascists, and he's like, right on, you know, something like that. okay, tracks. Now this scene here. Rick asks for a cigarette. Oh, he calls it a straight.
Straight? Yeah, is that slang
straight,
for
straight? Is that a slang? For, I mean, obviously it's slang for cigarette.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with that. But.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a scene I just want to say. I saw way back in college or early after, and I remembered this scene like 30 years later. This scene stuck out.
This is very, now they'd call it, the kids today would call it cringe.
Yes, right. But so, hilarious.
He asks for a cigarette. Yes. Jennifer Saunders says she has one in her bag. He sort of just grabs the bag away from her, opens it up, starts rooting through it. And in the course of this, he pulls out a tampon and starts playing with it with obviously he has no idea what this item is. And everyone around him is just stunned.
And it just keeps getting, like, he keeps doubling down on it. And to the extent he eventually dunks it in the drink, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, somebody else's drink. And he's like, it's a telescope. And
it just, you're right. It's a memorable scene. Okay.
Yeah.
It's and pretty, he suddenly realizes funny. What it is then.
At the very end, he realizes it. Okay, now, this is a funny little thing. The camera is focused on a clock with, like, speeding hands going around, you know, like to indicate the passage of time. But it turns out then, because some guests ask what time it is, it turns out that that's not the case at all. The clock is just broken, and it does that sometimes.
Is that the time?
No,
The clock's broken. The hands keep whizzing round really fast. It's only really 7:30.
I thought that was a good gag. Mike enters with a great joke. I don't know if you got, maybe this is an old joke that has been told a million times and I'm just unfamiliar with it. I don't know if it's actually original to the show, but I thought it was great and I want to use this all the time now. He comes in and somebody says, "Hi, Mike," and he says,
"I'm not yet, but I soon will be."
That's right.
That's great. Okay. Neil enters, opens the fridge. His friend Neil falls out of the fridge.
He's been in there the whole episode at this point.
Yes, yes. There's some bit about cryogenics and I don't know. But but I just like that the professor sees this and he says, "Wow, what is this stuff? Tobacco or Pink Floyd?"
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I guess it's kind of like the sort of psychedelic transporting nature of the pink, and obviously people generally are not unknown to have imbibed of certain types of cigarettes whilst enjoying the music of Pink Floyd. So,
true.
I guess it kind of works, isn't it?
Right. The doorbell rings. Mike goes to answer. This time, it's Tommy Bolofsky, cousin of Jertsy, and he's very drunk, and he's trying to sort of, push his way in the party. But this had a great joke too, where he says, and trying to, you assume as the viewer, he's trying to get in. He says, "There's no chance of using your toilet, is there?" And then Mike says, "No." And he says, "I thought not. That's why I pissed in your garden."
Exactly.
That's a great bit. Okay, now here we go. Some of the fantasy stuff of the young ones. This elaborate horse-drawn carriage pulls up, and a woman looks like Cinderella, approaches Mike and says, "I'm looking for my prince." I get that.
And Mike, yes. Again, a real horse-drawn carriage.
That's
a good
point.
This is like
a
big deal.
But a great line here. She says, "I'm looking for my prince."
And this is a good line.
"Well, maybe they're upstairs with my etchings." And then, inviting her up to his room, right?
Prince.
That's great. And he delivers it in that just great sort of Mike way.
Mike is, those are his jokes. They're like, those boom, boom,
totally.
Boom, boom.
So he's taking her upstairs, is the presumption there. Okay. Rick is yelling at the guests that they need to start having fun. Somebody complains that there's no music because the pigs, smashed it up. And then there's a music performance, a band playing. We'll get back to that in a little bit. We like to save that for the end.
I'm amazed a little bit, by the way, that they're actually, because when they said they were having a party, I thought no one would.
You thought that was going to
be
the
like
plot
one of those things, but they're actually, it's like a big party. There's a lot of people there.
Yes. At this point in the show, actually a whole bunch of people arrive, and I think they say something about the pubs have closed, and so
it. And some of them are Vivian's friends because they're
so it gets really crowded at this point.
You got to remember at this time when this was filmed, all the pubs were shut at 11, so you couldn't drink after 11 unless you were at home. There's no way to
Is that different now?
That changed in the late 90s under Tony Blair.
A good joke though that no one would come to their party unless they had nowhere
okay
to
there you go
and they go to the party.
Yes, that makes sense. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so that's interesting. I guess I'd always heard that the pubs did not stay open as late as we may be used to over here in terms of closing time.
It was quite a big hoo-ha when they changed that, because the idea was that they wanted to make it a bit more continental, and then so people wouldn't drink so quickly as much, in a hurry, because they had to get finished and then get inebriated really quickly. But of course, we don't have like Italian or Spanish weather, so staying out. Yeah, so I think what happened was people just kept drinking longer, but the same quality, you get to keep going longer, that was quite a big deal when that changed, certainly.
Over here, you will have different closing time laws based on where you live, but in general, I'd say 2 a.m. is sort of the general.
2 a.m.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's always a few that like 4 a.m. in some places.
Yeah. And then there's like Utah where you can't drink at all or something. Yeah.
They never open.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Let's see, where are we here? So now, I mentioned a bunch of guests arrive. One of them has a boombox. So now we start hearing music in the background. And then one guest, now what was this, Stephen? Was it just a giant can of beer? Is that what that was?
Yeah, I made a note of this. I thought you'd ask about this.
Okay.
So this is something known as a Watney's Party 7. Party 7, okay? Now, they slightly predate my time of drinking beer because I was about 10, 12 when these first came out. So, but I was aware of it. So apparently it's from before you could get 4 or 6 packs of cans of beer. So this was like a, you can get these like mini kegs now. Mm-hmm. That have like, yeah. So this is like a predator of that, but it didn't have kind of the tap on it in the same way. It was just like a 7-pint can of beer.
Just a joke.
And obviously it was popular at student parties particularly because you could get a lot of beer in one, you know, easy to transport.
Right.
Form,
but the idea was that several people would partake.
I think
of
that
this
was
beer.
The idea.
Yeah. Well, not
yeah.
meant to be
not one person, not one guy.
Yeah, the idea is it would be shared around, but yeah. So, but yeah, that Watney's Party 7 is quite a well known, or certainly was a well known thing. That's what that is.
Okay. We also see one guest spray painting Smash the State on the wall of the stairwell.
Yeah.
And of course, this gets Rick's attention, and they have a little conversation about blowing up a panda.
Yeah.
Which is a police car?
Yeah, first off, he also sprays onto Rick's face as well, doesn't he, when he's spraying Spray the State, because Rick's staying there and he keeps going and it goes onto Rick's face.
Yes.
And sort of, so maybe not so much now, but a panda car would be a reference to a police patrol car because it's got black and white on it, you see.
Yes, makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Neil is now stuck with Tommy Bilofsky, but he...
Oh, wait, one of my favorite lines from Rick is here, which is when he talks about, I think it comes now, I have in my notes, is when they're talking about the police car and he's talking about the cops and he says, especially the few bad apples that spoil their otherwise spotless image, which is incredibly timely in America now. I mean, there's a lot of talk about how it's not a few bad apples, it's the whole culture of police. But it was Rick, of course, he's such a weasel. He's just the worst.
That's right. No, that's a good point. He doesn't really... He has no firm beliefs. He has no real belief system,
No, he doesn't. Everyone else does. I mean, as morose as Neil is, as crazy as Vivian, they all have beliefs. But
no, he's just... the only reason he's really into, you know, anarchy and you know, all of this is just because he was trying to, go along
popular,
and impress other people or what have you. Right?
Yeah. He desperately wants to be liked, doesn't he? That's the problem. Yes.
Exactly.
Okay, so I mentioned... Neil is then stuck with Tommy Bilofsky, but he sort of escapes to go answer the door. But before he can answer the door, he has to hide the joint that he has. So he puts it in his mouth. And then there's these two guys who are like party crashers trying to get in. And they come up with a whole bunch of different, you know, lies about people they know in the party. Yeah. It's pretty funny. And Neil won't speak at all. And they're really getting nervous. And then smoke just sort of comes out of him. I'm not sure. Like, it's a...
Well, he's holding it up.
Yeah, because the joint's in his mouth and it's still burning. Yeah. So that's
because he eats it right before he goes out.
Oh, I guess that's the thing. Yeah.
Yes, but it looks in the certain lighting and everything, it looks sort of frightening, I guess, to these guys, and they run off, right? And this is great. Neil then returns to the party. He sits down with his friends. He takes a bong hit. Now that was on television. Guy taking a bong hit in 1982, right? That's interesting. You would not have seen that. I mean, this did run in the United States, you know what I'm saying, but it wouldn't, an American production would not have had a guy smoking a bong.
Well, in the 90s on that, we had that show, That 70s Show, and they would always have these scenes of them, like the camera would move around the table, and they were obviously smoking pot, but they never showed any pot.
You'd see sort of smoke and the way they were acting and talking, but you didn't actually see it.
But there was never a shot of them holding a joint,
Well, let alone a bong. I just find that to be...
I know.
but Neil takes a hit on the bong, and then he just floats up away, all the way into outer space. There, you see this...
Again, so elaborate.
it is. Actually, it was shot really well, just the way he sort of, ascends and then descends later. But you see the space shuttle, and the astronauts on there are noticing this in quite amaze, and they say it's like the David Bowie song, The Gene Genie.
And then he quotes, what is
Space
he?
Oddity.
He quotes Space Oddity, But it said Gene Genie.
Yes. He then, one of them then does say, hey, look.
Hey, look. The planet Earth is blue, and there's nothing we can do.
Neil lands on the moon, and these two like moon men, they're starting to look like robots almost, but they're, I don't know what they are. They're some moon
yeah,
men.
I can shed some light on that, Jim.
Okay.
Yeah, so no. the moon men, as you call them, appear to be taking off something called like Smash Instant Potato. So at the time, you could get something called so Instant Potato in a packet. I just add water, and you had these like robots that kind of looked like that would be that used for the advertising of the Smash. Like Smash makes mash was kind of like the catch line. So that's what immediately I thought when I saw that. So yeah, I think that's
nice.
Maybe where that's from, possibly.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no idea. Yep.
I had no idea. Yeah.
Well, they use dynamite to send Neil back.
Yes.
And then he just sort of floats back down and lands in the spot where he was before. At this point, the two party crashers we saw earlier are on the roof. They're trying to get in through the chimney. And then out of the chimney, they pull.
Like, yeah. Was it Oliver Twist?
I guess.
Or a ragamuffin of some type?
Well, this. Okay. So back in sort of Victorian times and before, they would send, you know, small children would be used to sweep chimneys. So they would climb up to sweep them. So I guess it's kind of just like a fact that there's like some small child's been stuck in there since Queen Victoria's time, kind of thing. But also these two party crashes, that they try so hard to be intimidating and tough, and they're
right.
just not, are they?
No.
you wouldn't be. Yeah, you would. Mm-mm. If that was them trying to intimidate you, you'd sort of just feel like you cough in their direction and they'd run away. You know.
Yeah, you're right. They. At first glance, you would think, oh, these are going to be tough guys, and they're the worst. Yeah.
So I got to tell you guys real quickly here. The boy does reference that he is a beloved fictional character from the late 19th century or something like that at one point. Or maybe he doesn't use the word beloved, but he's a fictional character from the late 19th century. So I'm like, okay, this must be an Oliver Twist reference.
It's a Dickens reference, definitely. Yeah,
right. So and then I was like, but was Oliver Twist a chimney sweep? I know there were some other parts of the story, but maybe it was. So I googled Damn. Oliver Twist chimney sweep, and it does come up that was apparently something the character had done for a little while in the book. But this I find more fascinating than anything else. When you Google Oliver Twist chimney sweep, you come up with several businesses, chimney sweep businesses called Oliver Twist, which is insane to me. Like, why would you name your business that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess it's got a kind of, there's an association between the small child going up the chimney and the chimney sweeping. But yes. But the fact you would reference sort of child abuse in your business title is maybe, but I guess it people don't think of it like, yeah, it kind of makes sense to me, but somehow.
Yes. Okay. They also make a reference to Santa being stuck in the chimney. There was a little discussion on that. And then we do later see Santa. At the party.
Your Father Christmas.
Yes. Although they call him Santa here, but yes. But Father Christmas is the preferred term.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we talked about this on the Christmas episode, but yeah, it was when I was growing up, it was always Father Christmas, and it's Santa was kind of like, that's what Americans say. But it's become, Santa has become more popular now. I think it's because it's shorter and easier to put on signs and that sort of thing that you put outside your house and that sort of stuff. So
that's true.
Where are we here? So we're almost done. Okay, now we see Mike in the bedroom with Cinderella. He sort of turns away for a moment, references that it's midnight. She immediately turns into a pumpkin. He doesn't see this happen, but she turns into a pumpkin. There's now a pumpkin on his bed.
He doesn't know what happened, which plays off later a little.
Let's see here. Oh, I already mentioned the gigantic can of beer. That was Vivian's friends. There's this sort of nerdy guy at the party. I'm guessing one of Rick's friends who tries to talk to Tommy Bolofsky. Who then like vomits on him. and then he tries to talk to Vivian and his friends, who then Vivian punches him. And then they all sort of descend on him. And Vivian says he's come up with a new party game called Dissection that they're going to play, right? Which I guess goes to.
He is a medical student.
Exactly. Okay, now we go back up to Mike's room again. And as a present for his new girlfriend, he doesn't understand where she went, but as a present for her, he has carved the pumpkin into a jack-o'-lantern.
That's a great dark joke.
It really is, isn't it? Okay. And then Rick hears some banging on the wall. He yells, "Shut up, you old witch." It's the neighbor's complaining. He yells, "Shut up, you old witch." And it turns out it actually is an old witch on the other side of the wall, using the broomstick right. to bang on the wall. She bashes through the wall and pokes one of Vivian's friends in the ear. He thinks that it was Neil. And then they go to beat up Neil and they chant, "Kill the hippie."
Yes.
And then the party, at this point, the party's like really like some kind of riot going on. The whole place is just total mayhem, right? And then you see Neil waking up in his bed and he says it was all a dream.
Yes.
But then the kicker, if you watch all the way through the credits, is the dream was what he was him waking up in bed. The beating up is still yeah. happening. The kill the hippie yes. part is still going on, right? And there we go. That's.
And also, at one point, I want to mention that Jennifer Saunders' character calls Father Christmas a fascist.
Yes, that was great. All right, so that was interesting. Now let's get back to the music performance, which was a band called Rip, Rig, and Panic. I see shaking heads here. Nobody really knows about this band.
This is the only time I've ever heard Rip, Same Rig, here. And Panic was on this Same. Show. I remember the name is very memorable.
Same here. And it was sort of this, what would you call it? It was kind of like world music, I guess is what you'd
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I immediately thought Patrick would love this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's right up his street.
Yeah, it had sort of African rhythms and stuff like that. Yeah. It was very hippie-ish. It was, you know, this would be a Neil band, I think. Mm-hmm. I did look them up here on the Wikipedia, and this I found very interesting. So Rip, Rig, and Panic... According to Wikipedia, they even mentions on the Young Ones episode, it credits them as Rip, Rig, and Panic with Andy Oliver. So she was the singer there that you saw. But also in this band, another singer in this band, Nana Cherry. You guys recognize that name?
Oh, really?
Yeah, cool.
Oh, yeah.
She had that hit Buffalo Stance at some point, which is a jam song. Which is a jam of a song, not a jam song. Nana Cherry was in Rip, Rig, and Panic, but they didn't last very long. It says here, years active 1980 to 83. So this was maybe the high point of their career was being on The Young Ones. All right. Any other thoughts on this episode?
It was a good one. It was so much happened. Yeah. It really was interesting.
Yeah, there was lots of jokes in this one. It felt much more like there was... Although there were weird, odd bits, they weren't as long as some of the others, and so it felt more like a normal sort of anarchic type of sitcom thing. So I think
right, there weren't a lot of parts that just went on and on, and you're like, I wish this would be over.
Yeah, all the little sort of non sequitur things, the tangential things, were pretty quick and tidy, and got in, and they were all pretty funny too. They made their point, got up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so next week, guys, we are going to talk about the season ender, Flood. Mm-hmm. So I shuffle papers. Okay. All right, if anyone would like to comment on The Young Ones, you should call 612-440-1984. There you go, or email rock@suburbspod.com. And we'll be back next Friday. The podcast continues on its regular schedule, but these special episodes are Fridays only. So check us out again next Friday. We'll talk about the next episode. I'm Jim Lenihan, and with me has been
Stephen Routledge
and Will Pfeiffer.
All right. Talk to you all later. Lost in a kind of loneliness is a crime of passion, a deep repression. What's that whisper in your blood? The heat within rising. You're my kind of glamour. And earlier, Steve, when you talked about the drink you like to have before you go to bed, I thought you were going to say a pint of lager. That's where I thought this was going. But,
oh, yeah, well, whiskey,
but I'm projecting. That's more me, I think. Anyway, okay.